I've been asked before why I felt afraid to leave the kids with my husband, their father, while I ran errands to the grocery store or to choir practice or any other errands. And I'm happy to answer that here. I wasn't afraid for their physical safety. He wasn't going to hit them or hurt them in that way. So why was I afraid to leave them alone with him? Because he was a bully.
Welcome to the Covert Narcissism Podcast. I'm your host, Renee Swanson.
Have you ever been the target of a bully? I was. Fifth grade basketball team. Here I was, this little, I wasn't very tall, this little girl coming in to play on a team sport, and I had never played before. This was new territory for me, but boy, was I excited. I was so eager to learn. I wanted to be good. I listened to the coach. I did what he said. He knew what I needed to learn in order to be better at basketball, so why wouldn't I listen? But there was one girl on the team. Her name was Michelle. She was in charge. She wasn't that big. She was small like me, but she was big and in charge. And she clearly knew more than the coach or anyone else for that matter. To the coach, she played the role of being the perfect teammate. But when he wasn't around, she was a bully. One day, the coach gave us a drill to run, and then he left the gym. Well, I got up, I grabbed a ball, and I started to work the drill. Well, Michelle, in her usual way of authority, got in my way. She blurts out, "Of course you are going to do what he says." I tried to just continue in what I was doing. I tried to just ignore her, but she prevented that. She hits the ball out of my hand, stands in my way, and says, "So how are you going to do it now?" Well, I just went about my business. I got another ball, and I simply tried to continue the drill. But she would not be ignored. She continued to get in my face and began threatening me. I just wanted her to go away. I wanted to work on what the coach had asked of us. With my continued commitment, she finally shoves me. And at this point, the other girls gather around expecting things to escalate. Well, it was also right at this moment that the coach walked back in. "Hey, what's going on here?" Well, Michelle is the first one to speak up. "I'm just grabbing a ball for her so she can get back to work. I really like this drill, coach." Well, now she appears helpful and cooperative. Coach is pleased with her attitude and tells everyone to get back to work. For me, this was infuriating. Coach now thinks that Michelle is a positive member of this team. He is pleased at her apparent commitment to the work and to her teammates. And nothing could be further from the truth. Ultimately, I quit the team. Actually, that year. I never played school basketball again. This one bully in my life had a lasting effect. It took many years before I was able to let go of the effect and regain some confidence, especially when it came to physical activities and team sports. Now imagine living with Michelle inside your home. Imagine that she is your parent, that this is daily treatment, and you are forever stuck in this environment. There's no way out. Imagine your frustration and helplessness. For some of you, you do not need to imagine it because you have lived it. I'm Renee Swanson, your host of the Covert Narcissism Podcast, and today we are talking about covert narcissistic parents and that they are bullies. If you are watching this on YouTube or listening to this podcast, wherever you are today, please hit that subscribe button, that follow button, so that you can stay current on the material that we are providing. But not only that, you then help us to spread the word to more people. You are vital in this mission to reaching our world of people just like you who are living in this nightmare. For those who are raised by a covert narcissistic parent, my heart goes out to you. The pain that you have endured is unfathomable. You should be applauded for surviving this nightmare. Not only that, though, you should be hugged and supported, given the space to heal for quite a while. Being the target of a bully is traumatic, especially when you are in a position that you cannot escape, a position of helplessness, a teammate that you can't get away from, a coworker that you can't get space from, a boss that you have to answer to, or how about a parent? To the world, that parent looks amazing. They appear so invested in their kids, so caring and so loving. But in reality, they are overbearing, withholding, impossible to please, and crushing to your confidence and your spirit. Under such a parent, the child is just a shadow of themselves. When children have a narcissistic parent, they are being parented by a bully, and they cannot escape the situation. They can't make sense out of it, and they certainly cannot reach out for help. You see, when a bully is bullying its victim and somebody else walks up, let's say a teacher walks up, the demeanor of the bully instantly changes. Oh, we were just goofing around. They put their arm around their victim. Isn't that right? We were just goofing around. If the victim at this point stands up for themselves and says no, they know that there will be a significant price to pay for that. So they half-heartedly laugh it off and they say, everything's fine, with an unconvincing shrug of the shoulders. You see, a bully's demeanor, the bullying piece, is saved for the victim. And they have a totally different demeanor that they show to the world. This is true of a narcissistic parent as well. Their demeanor is very different when they're in front of others. Behind closed doors, they are berating their child. Everything the child has done is wrong, and the child feels completely worthless and trapped in a prison. But when Aunt Susie drops in, the demeanor flips completely. Isn't Sally wonderful? Doesn't she look so beautiful in this cute little dress that I bought for her? This narcissistic mom or dad now uses Sally to get compliments and accolades for themselves because they are such an amazing parent. Anyone that the child might reach out to for help, they aren't going to understand because they don't see that side of the narcissistic parent. And so that child runs the risk of being told, oh, you just don't understand. You just don't see him right. You just don't get it from an adult perspective. Or they might run the risk that this adult that they've reached out to for help might go back and actually talk with the covert narcissistic parent, only making matters worse. Think about this, you know, a 12-year-old kid dealing with a classmate who's bullying them. And the victim of the bully does not want anyone to step in or try to resolve this for him. You know, when my kids were going through little, you know, times of somebody bullying them at school, they might open up to me, but they certainly did not want me to step in and try to help. Why? Because any attempts from an adult only make matters worse for them. Now imagine a child who's being bullied by their parent. The child reaches out for help from a family member, a grandparent, an aunt, an uncle, a trusted family member. Well, this adult family member, trying to help, thinking that they're helping, goes back and talks to the parent. They want to help the situation, and they believe that if they talk with the parent, that the parent will be understanding of how the child is feeling. No, they won't. This parent is a covert narcissist. They will not be understanding of the child's feelings. And now there's a price to pay for making that parent look bad, for talking bad about that parent. Who pays this price? The child who reached out for help. How dare you talk about me like that? After all that I do for you, you are so ungrateful. This is soul crushing to a child who already feels trapped, helpless, and hopeless. So I'm going to give you three effects that narcissistic parenting has on these kids. One is, while they know that perfect doesn't exist, it's still their goal. They believe, and they may know, you know, intellectually, that perfect does not exist. They may even voice that, but they're still going to hold themselves to a standard of perfect. That rule that perfect doesn't exist works great for other people, but it doesn't apply to them. They expect perfect from themselves. Well, this is self-sabotaging behavior. It's so emotionally harmful because perfect isn't possible. This is a setup for personal disappointment. It's the birthing ground for low self-worth and a false sense of self. They can be a very high-performing student, but yet feel like they are a failure. That's that false sense of self. They don't see themselves in the achievements that they accomplish. They only see the pieces that they fail at. One low grade crushes their soul, even though maybe they are the top-performing student in the class. One dropped pass or one missed basket crushes them, even though they are the top-performing athlete on their team. Number two is they turn these same levels of perfection onto others. Now, they will give the words of perfect doesn't exist, no one's perfect, but that's not the standard they hold themselves to or other people to. They learned this from their parent, after all. The parent expects perfect from them, they expect perfect from themselves, and thus they expect it of others too. The tiniest mistake from someone around them can send them into a rage. Why? Because they're already upset and hurt on the inside of them, but now they have somewhere to put that pain. And number three, they have a huge reaction to criticism. They criticize themselves internally all the time. Remember, I said this is an emotional self-harm. It's self-sabotaging behavior when we think that we have to be perfect, when we hold that standard for ourselves. And so now they criticize themselves internally all the time because of course they're not perfect. But they cannot handle any form of criticism from someone else because it touches that internal criticism. It touches that part inside them that is shameful because they're not perfect. They might receive many compliments from other people, but that's not their focus. One negative comment, even a supportive criticism, is met with defensiveness and aggression or passive aggressiveness or a collapse because they go into victim mode. I've been asked before why I felt afraid to leave the kids with my husband, their father, while I ran errands to the grocery store or to choir practice or any other errands. And I'm happy to answer that here. I wasn't afraid for their physical safety. He wasn't going to hit them or hurt them in that way. So why was I afraid to leave them alone with him? Because he was a bully. And exposure to bullying has long-lasting psychological effects on the victims. And these victims were children. I would leave the house with the kids happily playing and come home to a total disaster. And this didn't happen occasionally. It happened often. So what is it that he would do? One of the biggest things he would do is what I call guard dogging. He looked for a reason to be mad at the kids. Well, guess what? Kids are kids and they do kids' things. If you're looking for a reason to be mad at a kid, you're going to find it. Okay? They do things that adults don't understand or don't have patience for. There's nothing wrong with kids being kids. They could be happily playing in the other room, having nothing to do with their dad, and yet he would find a way to be mad at them. Maybe their laughter got a little too loud. Maybe one of them jumped on the sofa. Maybe they forgot to clean up the game that they, you know, when they finished playing it. Maybe the dog was barking and they didn't quiet the dog. I don't know. It didn't matter. It was a bunch of little bee stings. But it gave him a place to direct his anger, a reason for his anger, an anger that already existed and had nothing to do with these boys. As such, his anger did not match the crime, and it left the boys in complete confusion, feeling less than, feeling worthless, and feeling helpless. Instead of giving kids the space to be kids, his level of expectation was unreachable. He would agree with me that kids did not need to be perfect, and he would even agree that our kids were really good. Yet, when they were anything less than his version of perfect, they paid a high price. If our boys got a little fussy with each other, he could not handle this. He would jump in order to referee and teach them both a lesson. He loved his own lessons, using analogies and physical examples that would go on and on and on. With me, it might be a circular conversation, but with the kids, it was a circular monologue, a lecture in which they were not allowed to twitch, speak, move, even really hardly breathe. If they looked away, it just made it worse. Now you're not listening to me. Now I got to start over. After enduring this intense confusion and the accompanying confusing feelings, children of bullies are left hurting. They feel like the parent is disappointed in them. They feel like an inconvenience to them. They feel like they don't matter, and they definitely don't feel like they're safe to voice their own feelings. They walk away feeling unloved and unheard. If they could spend the whole evening without getting any attention from him, then things would be okay. But if they did anything that captured their dad's attention, there was a high potential of an emotional breakdown and disaster. One of the big issues with me leaving the house is that I never knew what was going to set things off. When I returned home, it was clear that something had. If I asked my husband how the evening had gone, he would say, "Oh, it's been a good evening. Nothing unusual." But my kids were in their separate rooms, mad, closed off from the world, not playing, not engaging with anything, and sometimes sitting in total silence. And I would ask the kids how things were, but often I did not get an answer. They wouldn't tell me what had happened. At this point, they wouldn't tell me because I was still trying to fix things with their dad. So when they told me, I would talk with him in hopes of working this out. But he would go back to, quote, make things right. And we all know how this goes with a covert narcissistic person. They simply pick up where they left off in explaining how this is all your fault. So what would my husband do that caused me to not want to leave my kids home with him? He would trap them in hour-long circular monologues. When they twitched or looked away, he would make them stand at attention and not move while he continued his monologue. He wouldn't listen to them. He would tell them, "I know you don't think that you did anything wrong here, so you're never going to change." Talk about projection. He projected his feelings and his frustrations onto them. And if they got upset and went to their room, he would follow them in and trap them there and just continuing his monologue of why they need to change, why they need to listen, why what they did was so bad, and end it all with, "Oh, but I love you." My boys have told me that they never felt loved by him, so they hated it when he would say that because it didn't match their feelings. I remember one time I came home to my husband trying to help our son with his math homework. He told his son that the teacher's way of doing these math problems was stupid and that his son needed to learn to do it his way. And then he then gave his son additional math problems to solve rather than working on the homework his teacher's way. So when I returned home, our son was in tears. He was frustrated. He certainly wasn't making progress now on his homework, and he had been trying to do this for several hours. He just wanted to get the homework done. There were other times where my husband had decided that the kids were not eating healthy enough, so he would get out raw spinach, put it on the bowl in front of them, and insist that they eat it. "Now, you can't have any salad dressing on it because it's not good for you. I never use salad dressing, so you shouldn't either." And he would make them sit there until they ate that spinach. Not a very fun evening in the household. Children in these environments have a really tough time forming a realistic picture of life and of themselves. They struggle to find realistic self-expectations. They struggle to find reasonable expectations of others. They feel alone and isolated, and they believe that no one understands and that there's no one they can reach out to and that something must be wrong with themselves. If you are parenting with a covert narcissistic partner, Your kids are confused and hurting. Be that anchor for them. One genuine, honest, open, unconditional relationship with your kids. That emotional safety. They need the emotional safe zone, and they need it from you. That is enough to help them break through this confusion. I will be talking soon more about ways we can help our children. So stay tuned. I wish you so much peace on your journey of healing.
You have been listening to the Covert Narcissism Podcast with your host, Renee Swanson. Be sure to check out our website at www.covertnarcissism.com. There you will find many resources just for you to help you on this journey. You can also reach out to me by email at Renee, R-E-N-E-E, at cnglifecoaching.com. Those letters are CNG, as in Covert Narcissism Group. I do look forward to hearing from you. I wish you so much peace on your journey of healing.
The information provided by Renee Swanson and the Covert Narcissism Podcast is for educational purposes only and is not to be used for diagnosis purposes and not intended to be a substitute for clinical care. Please consult a healthcare provider for guidance specific to your case. This material discusses narcissism in general. It does not claim that any specific person has narcissism and should not be used to refer to any specific person as having narcissism. Permission is not granted to link to or repost this material to support an allegation or a claim that any specific person is a narcissist. That would be an unauthorized misuse of the material and information provided.